أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، وباعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى، تبارك وتعالى. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على خاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين وشفيع المذنبين، الرسول المؤيد والنبي الممجد المصطفى الأمجد أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما على الإمام المنتظر وحجة الله الثاني عشر ابن العسكري المنتظر ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من يومنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فإن الله الصادق العليم قال في كتابه الكريم القرآن الحكيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: لقد كنت في غفلة من هذا فكشفنا عنك غطاءك فبصرك اليوم حديد. صلوات. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. First of all, allow me to extend my sincere condolences to each and every one of you on the arrival and the hulul of this hazin and the grievous month of Muharram, a month which has been always, since the tragedy of Karbala, a month of grief, not only for us, but more specifically for the family of the Holy Prophet, Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And before I start the introduction to what should be expected in the next few nights, because as the norm is that the first night usually is a night of introduction, what to expect, building a platform for the other subsequent nights. One confession, few points, and then into the main topic. But before I start all of these things, those of you who have been in touch with the scenario going on in the world, I'm sure are going to share the sentiment that I'm sharing. Because since yesterday, it has been very disturbing to note the events that have been taking place specifically in Palestine and the atrocities that have been committed that are going on in Palestine. Very disturbing. These last 2 days it's been pretty upsetting since the time this news broke out, to such an extent that at one moment of time, out of frustration, I had to just switch off the television. I just could not bear watching. The situation in Gaza, as is said in English, and Gaza as it is said in Arabic, is beyond comprehension for you and me. What we are being informed is just the tip of the iceberg as to what the Palestinians in Gaza are going through. If you have been going through history, the only comparison that I can give about what is happening in Gaza makes me remind myself about a situation that prevailed at the time of Banu Umayyah and then later in Bani Abbas. And more specifically, one personality in this entire history of the Islamic history and events, a person by the name of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf al-Thaqafi. The only comparison that I can think of right now about the Gaza is the prison that Hajjaj used to have. A prison that was there at the time of Hajjaj was a prison that had no roof. It was a big ground, several times of a football field, enclosed by huge walls. The top was open, there was no roof. So there was no shade from the sun. We're talking about the Arabian Peninsula, we're talking about Iraq. Alhamdulillah, quite a few number of us go for Iraq for ziyarat. There is no shade, there was no shade on top to protect from this merciless beating down of the sun. There was no shade to protect from those cold droughts and drafts and the wind of winter. At that time, the Sadat and the Sayyidani would be inside, captured by Hajjaj in that open tent, Kabisa blockaded from all sorts of things, all sorts of comfort, all sorts of solace. Gaza right now is exactly like that. Completely blockaded. That means even if a drop of water has to come inside Gaza, it has to be through the permission of Israel. No food, no fuel, no water, no electricity. They are living in an open prison. We, as we sit over here, are not able to do anything. We are helpless. We cannot do personally anything. But we can become a reason for doing something. Because we have somebody with us who can do everything as and how he wants. Because he is not limited by time, he is not limited by space, he is not confined by the boundaries, he doesn't require visas to move about, he doesn't require any help of any sophisticated weaponry. We are talking about the one and only Hujjat ibn al-Hasan al-Askari, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. The only person in the world who can help the cause of the Muslims is the one person. And in this first night of Muharram, with the sake and for the sake of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, I would request all of us, looking at the plight of the Muslims all over the world, and more specifically in Gaza and the Palestinians, we let us raise our hands to beseech Allah to hasten the reappearance of our Imam Zamana with recitation of Dua Hujjah. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم كل وليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين سلام. Now for the part of confession. I have to admit that as I am sitting over here to commence the first night of the series of lectures for the month of Muharram, having had my choice, I should not have been sitting over here. Because I'm always averse to to reciting an ashra, whether it is Muharram or the ashra is Zainabiyah, in a place where I reside. Because it is my opinion that the Mu'mineen should also benefit from other reciters. But it so happened that when I had committed myself for this ashra around 3 to 4 years back, when I had come for the ashra is Zainabiyah, at that time it was nowhere on the cards that I would be coming down and settling in Dar es Salaam. And having given my word and commitment, it was very difficult to back out. I was not allowed to back out. And so justifying myself that I've been reciting less and probably I'm not as stale and people might still want to listen to me, and despite maintaining a low profile, many of you all might not even know me, I just walk into the mosque, walk out. I try to justify myself that yes, it would be appropriate to recite. This is point number one. Point number two, as has always been the case, whenever I recite the majalis of ashra, the sequence, I always point out to the people that these ashra, the sequence of majalis, are very different from the normal majalis that you hear. The sequence of majalis follow a different trend as opposed to individual majalis. And the reason is that in an individual majalis, you've got a time frame of 45 minutes, 1 hour, in which you have to convey a message. So you try to build up a base, you try to set up a platform, and then you try to summarize the entire message within the space of that 1 hour. The topics are always selected in that manner, so as to finish off the message within 1 hour. But when it comes to these majalis, the things are very different. Because the reciters, the orators, the scholars try to pick up a topic which is very expansive. Because these are the only time that we get to convey expansive messages to the people. And hence it becomes a responsibility on both sides that what was there in one majlis, you try to summarize the entire event of the majlis into the end of the majlis. At the end of the majlis, you go home with the message. Things are very different over here. Because the entire sequence that has to be presented is now broken down into 12 parts. You have to be attentive, you have to be focused, you have to go home and discuss this issue so that you are in touch with all those 11 parts to draw a final conclusion on the 12th part. In the absence of which, lack of which, the entire message that needs to be conveyed would be lost. You would only be getting piecemeal. And more the reason of this is because of the fact that unfortunately or fortunately, a trend has set into the community. A trend has become established into the community to regard these majalis as only occasions of thawab and getting thawab and rewards. Very good. This is something that has been recommended by the imams and the ma'asumeen alayhim as-salam. No problem. But in addition to this, there is also one more aspect which was the basis, the fundamental pivotal point because of which this entire invention, the entire institution of Azadari was set up. And that was stated by Hazrat Zainab, and that was to educate the people about what happened in Karbala. So in addition to being a reward earning setup and institution, this should also be regarded as an educative institution whereby we get to learn and share the issues about Islam that would in otherwise not be discussed between ourselves. With this point in mind, I would request you that in the course of these lectures, I will be shifting very frequently from various lectures and drawing conclusions from those that have already been discussed. If things are lost, it would be very difficult for you to grasp, because as it is, the time is short. I go pretty fast. The topic that is there is very expansive. If I keep repeating whatever has been mentioned previously, I will never complete the topic. So I need a help from you, cooperation from you, that keep in touch with the lectures, because I might just shuffle. And the third lecture, I had mentioned this, based on this is what is now subsequent to what is happening on those lectures. This is what I ask from you. Point number two. Point number three, as is always the norm, that when the sequence of lectures have to begin, the first lecture always is an introductory lecture, which informs and builds the base on which the other portions and the other lectures are based upon. In the absence of understanding the fundamental base, the edifice of the next and the subsequent nights will not be stable. So it is very important for us to understand what is today's introduction. Once this is understood, the subsequent lectures will have much more understanding. The topic that has been discussed or that has been given out, you might have heard it, you might not have heard it. But the topic that I have identified for these subsequent nights is titled Man in the Aftermath of Death. What exactly is it conveying? Basically, to be very honest, this is part two of an ashra that I had recited earlier someplace. What is intended is that I had initially identified that we have to understand a person's journey from the time he is born to the time he goes to the akhirah. And based on this, this topic has been selected. Part one of this ashra, which has already been recited, discussed about all the things that happen with man from the time he first sees Malakul Maut till the time he's put into the grave. Sequel number two, part two, is this ashra, to be followed inshallah sometime later with the third ashra. This ashra will concentrate that from the time a person is put into the grave, what happens with him up to the day of judgment. And the sequel number three, part three, some years later, would be exactly what are the situation and sequence consequences that take place in the day of judgment. But before I go there, today being an introductory lecture, tonight being an introductory lecture, also has an introduction to this lecture. And that introduction to this lecture begins with the verse number 165 of Surah An-Nisa. In Surah An-Nisa, verse number 165, Allah mentions the reason why He has sent the prophets. There are several reasons in the Quran that Allah has mentioned why He has sent the prophets. But this specific reason is, you could assume it to be one of the most important reasons. And the verse goes like this. Surah An-Nisa, verse number 165. Allah says, Rusulam mubashirina وَمُنذِرِينَ لِأَلَّا يَكُونَ لِلنَّاسِ عَلَى اللَّهِ حُجَّةٌ بَعْدَ الرُّسُلِ. He's saying, you know why I have sent the prophets to you? You know why I have sent all these anbiya to you? Starting from Hazrat Adam alayhi salam to Hazrat Khatam alayhi salam, 124,000 prophets. You know what is the reason? He's saying the reason is I wanted to secure myself from the objections of those who object. What does it mean? He's saying, I have sent the prophets, Rusulam, Mubashirin wa Mundirin. I will just leave the explanation of these two words a little later. I have sent these prophets, why? لِأَلَّا يَكُونَ لِلنَّاسِ عَلَى اللَّهِ حُجَّةٌ بَعْدَ الرُّسُلِ. So that after I have sent the prophets, on the day of judgment, no person should stand up before me and say, Oh Allah, you are now putting me into hell, whereas there was nobody to guide me. To confine myself, to protect myself, to safeguard myself from such individuals who might as well have accepted or developed this audacity to stand up before me on the day of judgment and say, how do you dare put me into hell when there was nobody to guide me? In order to offset this eventuality, I have sent 124,000 prophets. What are these 124,000 prophets going to do? What are their responsibilities? What are their work? What are they supposed to do? Two things. One, mubashirin, they are the bearers of glad tidings. They tell you, you obey Allah, these are there for you, the benefits. The jannah, the bounties, the grace, the favors. And mundirin, the warners, the threateners. You don't obey God, this is what is waiting for you in hell. You don't obey God, these are the punishments in the grave. You don't obey God, these are the troubles that you will face at the time of death. Mubashirin wa munzirin.
We find that two of the most important responsibilities of a prophet is, one, to give glad tidings to those who are righteous, and second, to warn those who are evil about what to expect. With this thing in mind, you have to realize this logic that Allah has used, that He has said, O prophets, when you go, give glad tidings, give basharat of the bounties. Warn the people of the punishment. This is in accordance with one's fitrat. Because He is the Khaliqul Fitrat. He has created the fitrat. He knows what man thinks. And He knows how man works. And He knows what goes in these grey cells of man. He knows man very well. That if man does not have two of these things, he will never go into any of my obedience. What are those two things? One, the desire and the tamah and the greed of paradise, or the fear of the fire of hell. You look at any instance, forget about religion, in the world, whether it is business, whether it is social, whether it is educational, you will find every act that a person does is bound or dominated or motivated or based on either of these two things. Either he is doing it because he is greedy, he wants something, he is desirous of something, or he is fearing something. Let's take an example of a business. Why does a person do business? Because he wants money, na? He wants money because immediately when holidays start, the wife says, we want to go to Switzerland. No money, you cannot go to Switzerland. So you need to have money. At the same time, why does he pay his taxes and revenues? Because he knows if he doesn't pay his taxes and revenues, the TRA authorities will come sitting on his office and take him to task. So he pays his taxes. One way, he wants some benefits. Second way, he is fearful. And these are the two ideologies, the points of fitrat that Allah is tapping for mankind. Because you see, eventually when Allah has said the Sharia, Allah has sent His prophets with the Sharia, with the Quran. What is the idea? What is the crux? What is the final point? The point is that everybody should obey Him. That is the crux. وَمَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنْسِ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ I have not created man and jinn except that they worship me. How does he get people to worship him? How does he get people to obey him? How does he get people to become subservient to him? If he's just left it, Baba, you pray namaz. You pray salah. No problems, no thawab, no reward. Who's going to pray? Nobody's going to pray. He's tapped these two ideologies within man. One, the fear of the fire. Second, the desire of paradise. And this is what is termed in diplomatic parlance, in diplomatic talks, as the carrot and stick policy. You at times give a carrot to a country. That's what is done in the West. You want somebody to dictate to tow your line. You give him aid worth billions of dollars and he begins to tow your line. You don't want him to oppose any resolutions in the Security Council. You give him a multi-billion dollar aid and that country just remains silent. Or you warn them, you go against me and then you will have sanctions imposed. The carrot and stick policy. The carrot is the aid. The stick is the sanctions. This is what happens. Exactly the same thing with the fitrat of man. And exactly the same thing that Allah has tapped. You pick up the Quran. How can he get people to worship him? By fear and by greed. At times some people are doing it out of greed, out of desire for paradise. I've mentioned it once before. In the month of Ramadan, the hot summers of Dar es Salaam, an old man fasting. Why are you fasting? 65 years, Baba, leave it. Enjoy your life. No, I want to fast. Why? Because then I'll go to paradise. Paradise is waiting for me. There's somebody who's praying salat, working hard, he comes home in the afternoon, just prays the salat. People come over here in Namaz Jumu'ah. You see them coming. They have half an hour, 45 minutes from their lunch break to come over here. Running, they come over here, recite the salat. Running, they go back. Why? If we don't pray, we're going to be taken to task. Fear and greed. And pick up the Quran. Exactly the same thing. Let's take one surah, Suratul Waqia. On one hand, it is giving recommendations and exhortations to those who believe in, who are righteous. saying, if you are good, I've got things waiting for you. عَلَى سُرُرٍ مَوْضُونَةٍ مُتَّكِئِينَ عَلَيْهَا مُتَقَابِلِينَ. There I will give you reclining couches ornamented with fine jewelry. You and your partners will be sitting facing each other with all sorts of comfort. وِلْدَانٌ مُخَلَّدُونَ كَأَنَّهُمْ لُؤْلُؤٌ مَكْنُونَ. You'll have around you young, beautiful boys who are always there to serve you. You say, I want war. Before you say water, the water is there with you. وَفَاكِحَةٍ كَثِيرَةٍ مِمَّا يَتَخَيِّرُونَ. And you'll have numerous fruits and whatever you desire from the fruit species. وَلَحْمِ طَيْرٍ مِمَّا يَشْتَهُونَ. And out of the flesh of birds, whatever you want is waiting for you. And moreover, حُورٌ عَيْن كَأَمْثَالِ الْمَكْنُونَ لُؤْلُؤِ الْمَكْنُونَ. And those حُور عَيْن, look at the gleam in the eyes of these youths. Just look at them. Whenever you talk about al-hurul ain, the atmosphere gets charged up. There's a gleam in the eyes. There's a gleam in the eyes. Yes, it's for you. But only if you are righteous, huh? 3 days later, there's going to be New Year's night. Muharram going, majalis going. You skip majalis and go to the discos. No hurul ain, huh? You know what will happen? What is there waiting? Yeah, come over here. If you're not righteous, you miss majalis and go to the discos. Then what? Then what? Then the لَآكِلُونَ مِنْ شَجَرٍ مِنْ زَقُّومٍ. The sinners will be given the fruit of Zakum, the free tree of Zakum. The tree of Zakum is one of the trees that emanates from the lowest part of hell. And its branches are like the hair of Shaitan. So enormously detested and so odious that just the smell of it makes a person vomit. Will be given. لَآكِلُونَ مِنْ شَجَرٍ مِنْ زَقُّومٍ. And what else? لَشَارِبُونَ عَلَيْهِ مِنَ الْحَمِيمِ. Not just that, eat. When you want to eat, when you eat something that is detested, obnoxious, odious, you want to put out, you want to drink water, yeah, we will give you water. What water? مِمَّا إِنْ حَمِيمٍ. Boiling water. Moment it enters your tongue, everything it meets starts burning. لا بارد ولا كريم. These things that are given to you are not cold, huh? Not refreshing, huh? These are boiling things that are getting. So on one hand, you've got the greed, the desire. You want hurul ain, yeah, do come to the majlis. You don't want it higher. The qum is waiting for you. When these two things are going on, this is what is going according to the fitrah. But majority of the people, overwhelming majority of the people, are those who either follow, observe, obey and be subservient to God, either because of the fear or because of love, of a desire of paradise. There are certain individuals who are exceptions to this rule. There are certain individuals who don't worship God because of the fear of the fire. There are certain individuals who are an exception to this rule. They don't worship God for the love of paradise. Very handful, few. One of them, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wassalam. In one of his munajat, he says, Ya ilahi, ma abadtuka khawfan min narik. Let's get one thing very clear, God. You are my Lord, I'm your servant. I want to make things very clear, categorical today. Ya ilahi, oh my Lord, ma abadtuka khawfan min narik. I have not worshipped you, nor am I worshipping you out of the fear of your fire. Wala tama'an fi jannatik. Nor am I worshipping you out of the lalach and the tama' and the greed and the desire of your paradise. No. Then why am I worshipping you? وَلَكِنْ وَجَدْتُكَ أَهْلًا لِلْعِبَادَةِ فَعَبَدْتُكَ. But when I look at you, I find you deserving of being worshipped and I'm worshipping you. I look at you and I find you Al-Aleem, the All-Knowing. I look at you and I find you Al-Qadir, the All-Powerful. I look at you and I find you Al-Muhyi, the Giver of Life. And I look at you and I find you Al-Mumit, the Giver of Death. And I look at you and I find you Al-Ghaffar, the All-Forgiving. And I look at you and I find you Quddus, the All-Powerful. And I look at you and I find you X, Y, Z. And now when I see all these things, I have no option except to say, Subhana Rabbi Ala Ala wa bihamdi.
نعرہ تکبیر
اللہ اکبر
نعرہ صلوات
But these are exceptional people. These are exceptions. Most of us are fall into these two categories. Either out of we worship, obey God, out of the love for paradise and Hura Ayn. And second, out of the fear. But if you look at this category of people, you remove those rare exceptions of the Ma'asumeen, and the Shibh Ma'asumeen like Hazrat Abbas and Bibi Zainab, and those individuals who have been particularly, specifically, and personally trained by them, like the likes of Salman and Abu Dharr. This Salman and Abu Dharr are not ordinary people. We will talk about them. We need to know about them. We need to know how they have risen in ranks. We don't know about them. We will discuss. But we leave aside these rare exceptions. Majority, either out of love of paradise or fear of the fire of hell. But if you analyze this group itself, we find most of us, majority of us, worship God not because of paradise, but because of the fear of the fire. You don't believe me? Let me give you an example. Most of us do not worship and obey God, follow the dictates of God, follow the dictates of Islam because of the desire for paradise. No, it is more, I'm not saying all, majority. It's more out of the fear of the whippings and the lashings. You want me to give an example? Namaz al-Subh. The time is the shortest in the day. 1 hour 10 minutes, 1 hour 20 minutes. From Tulu al-Fajr to Tulu al-Shams. What happens? I want to compare this Salatul Subh with Salatul Layl. We know Salatul Layl 42 benefits. Salatul Layl 42 benefits. Risk increases, life increases, respect increases, face begins to glow, troubles warded off, fulan, 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 fulan goes on. Correct? These are the benefits. And you get the Huru Ain also, if you recite Salatul Layl. But Namaz al-Subh, it's wajib. We know if you miss wajib, the first thing that you'll be asked by Munkar and Nakir, why did you miss out? Now you tell me what happens. A person gets up 5 minutes to Qadha. As soon as he gets up Qadha at 7 o'clock, 6:55 he runs to the washroom, fast, wudu, Allahu Akbar, within a minute Salat finished. Isn't it correct? Salatul Layl the whole night from midnight to Tulu al-Shams, Tulu al-Fajr. How many recite? There we don't recite because there is no punishment for missing out Salatul Layl. But Namaz al-Subh you recite because you know you don't, that you'll get punished. If it was the fact that we worshipped God for the sake of paradise, we might have left out Namaz al-Subh but not left out Namaz al-Salatul Layl. But we do the opposite. Why? Because we are more scared about the whippings and the fires and the snake and the boiling hamim. And it is with this point in mind that when people would come to the Holy Prophet and says, show me this miracle, show me that miracle. Show me this mu'jiza, show me that mu'jiza. He was nonplussed. Every 5 minutes, now this is my words, not these are. Every 5 minutes somebody is coming. Show me this ajaz, show me this mu'jiza. What do I do? God comes to his rescue. He's saying, tell them, Baba, shut up. Because you are not here to show a drama. Every time somebody wants to see an out of the ordinary act, a mu'ajizah, show it to him. No, you're not here for that. You are here. Innama suratul Ra'd, verse number 7. Innama anta munzir. Those who know Arabic will know this. Innama anta munzir is the second degree of emphasis and stress. That means twice the emphasis. Allah says, verily, and indeed, and surely, and yaqeenan, and categorically. What? Anta mundir, you are just a warner. Your job is to warn the people that there is a qahhar and jabbar waiting for you if you disobey him. noticeable to observe. Allah did not say, innama anta mubashir. In the whole Quran, you don't have this sentence that you are only a mubashir. But you have two instances when Allah says, innama anta mundir wa innama anta nadhir. Both of this is warning. This itself shows that Allah has been knowing that most of the people will bow down to Him when they are subjected to punishment and torture. And the reason that this has to be is that not because He wants your worship, because worshipping Him will translate into benefits that will come back to the worshipper, not to God. Because God is... Ya ayyuha an-nas antumul fuqara'u ila Allah wallahu huwal ghaniyyul hamid. O people, you are fuqara, you are the faqir of Allah. Allah is independent, not in need of your worship. Now when this thing is there, when the Holy Prophet has been addressed, innama anta mundhir, you are the warner. When we sit over here on this minbar, which is symbolic of the member of the Holy Prophet, then at times it becomes our duty to become mundhir. And this is what is intended in these entire nights. Because now we will be discussing every stage that a person will go through from the time he is put into the grave up to the time he will be raised. Things will be very graphic. When you look at the television documentaries and when you look at news, at times the news reporters are telecasting certain scenes which tend to disrupt, which tend to upset the people. So before they telecast that, they're right at the bottom. What you're going to see is going to be very graphic. Viewer discretion is advised. Viewer discretion is advised. What you will see is very graphical in picture. You might like it, you might not like it. It is right from the beginning you make up your mind whether you want to see those things. At the start of this lecture, this is exactly what has to be mentioned. Because what is going to be mentioned might be very difficult to digest, might be very difficult to hear, might be very difficult when you discuss it at home. But those are realities that need to be done. And the reason that I'm saying that spectator discretion is required is that if from the beginning you are informed that if you come and you hear certain descriptions of the punishment and then you get upset, please do not write to me. You are being too disruptive. You are being too scary. Because this is what the Holy Prophet's job was. Innama anta mundhir. And I have to take this precaution of talking like this. Because just in the month of Ramadan, when I was in Nairobi, in one of the lectures, when I was discussing a certain issue of akhlaq, I had to mention one of the adab that take place or that would encompass individuals who would violate that akhlaqi trait. After mentioning that description, which was very horrific and very horrendous, when I had a question answer session with only the ladies, one of the most important or the most vocal outburst that I received was from them, that this is too harsh. How can this be that way? But something which is there in the traditions, just by ours and yours, personal inclination does not change the Nizam of God, does not change the system of God. And this is what we need to look into. So from now onwards, up to the last night, all our discussions will be based on all the scenario that is taking place with man from the time he enters into the grave. But before he enters into the grave, before we begin this description, there is always the need to have an introduction. Because as I always believe, an edifice without a platform breaks down. Here I am not here to listen to your wah-wah. Here the important thing is to understand the message. And hence you will see I move at a very fast pace. People do not have time to give nada. The point is that a message has to be conveyed. That message for the next 12 nights again needs a platform. And that platform begins with here. Begins with the understanding of what man is. If you look at Suratul Mu'minun, from verse number 12 to 14. Suratul Mu'minun, verse number 12 to 14. Allah mentions the creation of man in the womb of the mother. A very long verse. A shorter description is given in another place. When Allah says, وَإِذْ قَالَ رَبُّكَ لِلْمَلَائِكَةِ إِنِّي خَالِقٌ بَشَرًا مِّن طِينٍ فَإِذَا سَوَّيْتُهُ. And remember the time Allah says, when I spoke to the angels and said, I'm going to create man. إِنِّي خَالِقٌ بَشَرًا مِّن طِينٍ. I'm going to create man from clay. Then he says, وَإِذَا سَوَّيْتُهُ. When I have given him the form, when I'm given him the shape, this is the physical body. وَنَفَقْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي. And when I've blown into him the soul, فَقَهُ لَهُ سَاجَدِينَ. Bow down in prostration to him, to Adam. This verse gives two stages of man's existence. The two dimensions of man's existence. One, the physical dimension, the flesh and the bones. And the other, the spiritual dimension, the soul. The body belongs to this material world. The soul belongs to the spiritual world. The body created here, soul brought from there, put into the body. Because we've got traditions that at 120 days, 4 months after the conception of a child in the womb of the mother, Allah sends an angel who comes and enters the womb and puts the soul into the womb of the mother, into the child. At 120 days, the soul is brought from the spiritual world, amalgamated with this body which is of the material world. And then we've got a personality called man. Both of these two entities have their own separate rulings, because both of them come from different entities and realms. The body from this world, the soul from the other world. Each of them have their own responsibilities. Each of them have their own rules. And that is why you find when the body gets najis, it has a different ruling. When the soul gets najis, it has a different ruling. When the body gets najis, you just put water over it. Either once or twice, depending upon if it is blood, then it's once. If it is urine, then twice. After the najasat has been taken away. If the physical portion is becoming najis, just pour water, becomes spark. When the soul becomes najis, just pouring water doesn't work. You have to do ghusl. That is why at the state of janabat, you just can't come with water and just put it on your head. You have to do the niyat, because now the soul is najis. The najasat of the soul does not come to the najasat of the body. It is a very wrong conception, misconception in the minds of our old ladies and old people. And sometimes even the young ones. That if a person, if a lady is in the menses, or a person is in the state of janabat, that man, that person cannot cook. No, that cooking does not make it najis. That is not a physical najasat, that is a spiritual najasat. We hear, get to hear so many complaints from ladies when we go to the masjid, to the mosque, and when we recite. My mother-in-law says, if you are in the state of haiz, don't enter the kitchen. Baba, what is this? That haiz najasat is a spiritual najasat, not a physical najasat. So, even in the world, you have two rulings for the soul and the body. After death, again you have two rulings for the body and the soul. So when death comes, what does death do? You have this man which is made up of body and soul. The body from this material world, the soul from the spiritual world, amalgamated to form one body, one entity man. Death comes, what does death do? It just separates them again, leaving the material body into the material world and sending the spiritual body into the spiritual world. Once they separate, again they have their own individual rulings. Because now when man dies and the body remains, the body has a different ruling. The soul has a different ruling. The body needs to be given ghusl. The body needs to be given hanut. The body needs to be given kafan. The body needs to be given dafn. This is not what is there for the soul. For the soul there's a different set of rulings. Because after that the soul then becomes the reason for the question and answer of munkar and nakir. The soul becomes reason for the punishment in the grave. The soul becomes reason for the punishment to be meted out to the body. Different rulings altogether. But at this point of time, when we realize that man has two entities, two dimensions to him. What death does is separate this. We have to discuss about death. Because still we do not discuss about death. And what happens at the time of death? The subsequent stages after death, that means when a person goes into the grave, will not be comprehended. You need to know what happens at the time of death in order to understand what will happen after death. But this death that we are talking about is a very amazing thing. Because nobody in the world, this is one eventuality, this is one occurrence, nobody doubts. You have people doubting the existence of God, huh? You don't have people doubting the existence of death. You have atheists. They say God doesn't exist. You've got agnostics. People have been learning this in IRE in school. Agnostics, they don't know. Is God there? Is He not there? Sometimes they feel He's there. Sometimes they feel He's not there. This is an agnostic. An agnostic is a person who's not sure whether God exists or not. As opposed to a kafir. As opposed to a person who does not, an atheist. So no, there is no God. Definitely there is no God. So you have individuals who say and doubt the existence of God. But you never find anybody who doubts the existence of death. Even the person who does not believe in God says, yes, one day a man will die. Despite this being such an conclusive event and occurrence, you find the concept of death differs between those who believe in religion, those who do not believe in religion. Amongst the materialists and the empiricists, those who want everything to be put under the microscope and under the scalpel and the knife and the scissors, they say death means annihilation. We see man, he was walking, he falls down, he's dead. What happens after death depends upon which religion you follow. If you follow Islam, if you follow Christianity, if you follow Judaism, you're put into the grave. If you follow Hinduism, you're burnt, cremated. If you follow Parsi, Zoroastrianism, you're given to the vultures to eat. Either way, anywhere, whether you're put inside the grave, you're burnt, or you're given to the birds to eat, the body goes away. The body decays. They say when the body decays, that's the end of man. At the time of death, everything is the end. You watch movies, na? At the end, you have the end. Hiya, this is the end. Khalas. They say at the time of death, that is the end of man. Nothing comes after that. That is the view of those who do not believe in religion. But when it comes to Islam and religion, it's an entirely different scenario. Because according to Islam, death is not an end to life. It is a continuation of life. From one form to the other. In one realm, you leave, you go to the next realm, next world. And the amazing thing is that, when you refer to the Masumeen, and you ask them, what is this death? Can you describe death for me? There are so many different explanations that come. We will not be going into details. Just two of them to understand. That in case my young friends come across individuals of the atheist nature who want to emphasize that man's life ends after death, this is what is important for us to understand. Once the sixth imam is asked, what is death? At times the third imam is asked, what is death? At times the fifth imam is asked, what is death? And the expression that comes out is very, very amazing. See, at times, it's very difficult for us to understand what is happening beyond our understanding. Beyond what we see. Like for example, if a child is in the womb of the mother, and you tell him, you know, there's something that is called biryani, it's very nice, it's very tasty. And you go into a whole length of detailed description to the child, assuming the child is able to understand. And this is this, and this flavor, and this, and that, and he will hear, but he will not understand till he comes out and eats that biryani. Whatever we hear about death, we will not be able to understand till we see it, till we experience it. But for that it is necessary that at least some little understanding comes. The third Imam, Imam Hussain alayhi salatu was salam. Gives an excellent explanation to those who were doubting what was death, what happens. Is it the end? Because atheists were not restricted only to this world at this time. Even at that time people were there who did not believe in God. He specifically mentions this when he's talking to his companions on the night, on the day of Ashura, before the battle. He's saying, look, you're going to die. And death is going to come to you. He's saying, wait, sabran ya banil kiram. O children of a good breed, O noble breed children, children of a good family and parents. They're supporting the cause of Imam Hussein. They have to be from a noble breed. Sabran ya banil kiram, famal mawtu illa qantaratun ta'abur bikum min al-bu'usi wal-dharra'i ila al-jinan al-wasi'a wal-na'im al-da'ima. He's saying, you know what this mouth is, O people of good breed, wait for some time. Very shortly, mouth and death is going to come to you. But this is nothing except a bridge. This mouth, death is a bridge that takes you from the troubles and the punishments and the problems and the adversities and the calamities of this world into paradise. You just have to cross over it. You leave the adversities behind and the calamities and go into Jinan and the Na'im al-Da'ima. And forever and ever you will be in the gardens of bliss. Don't worry. But we will see that people still worry. And why? In the next two lectures. And they have got a reason to worry. Because when you hear what happens at the time of death, then it is haqqan alayya and alayna that we should fear death. But the same thing when it comes to the fifth Imam. Somebody asks him, what is death? He's saying, death is so simple. You experience it day and night. A maut je che. Evi vastu che ke tame divas ane raat ane tajurbo ane experience karo cho. Tajurbo karo cho. Kitu kevi rite? Suchi a maut. He's saying, huwal ladhi annawmul ladhi ya'atikum kulla layla. આજે મોત ની તમે જે ફિકર કરો છો, વ્યાતિ કરો છો, ટેન્શન માં છો, એ કઈ નથી. આજે નીંદર છે, ઊંઘ છે, કે જે તમે દિવસ અને રાત સુવો છો, એ જ છે. ફક્ત એક ફરક છે, ઇન્હા તવીલુ મુદ્દતુહુ, એનું લેન્થ, એનું ટાઈમ બહુ વધારે છે. ઊંઘ જેવી નથી, ટાઈમ એનું બહુ લાંબુ છે. એને કેવી રીતે? ઇમામ કહે છે, આ મોત જે છે, આ ઊંઘ જેવી છે. તમે રાતના જયારે સુઓ છો અને જયારે સુઈ જાઓ છો, તો કેવી રીતે તમે દુનિયાથી ગાફિલ થઈ જાઓ છો? તમે કહો છો કે હું સુઈ ગયો. તમને ખબર છે સુઈ ગયો એટલે શું? એ તમને મોત આવી ગઈ છે, પણ આ મોત નાની મુદ્દત છે. એ જે અસલ મોત મુદ્દત તુલાની છે. આપણે નથી સમજ્યા, પણ ઇમામ આપણે નથી સમજી શક્યા. તમે એક્સપ્લેન કરો વધારે. ઇમામ કહે છે, સુરત ઝુમર માં આયા નંબર 42 માં ખુદા કહે છે, સુર ઝુમર આયા નંબર 42 ખુદા કહે છે, વલ્લાહુ યતવફલ અનફુસ હીન મૌતહા વલ્લતી લમ તમુત ફી મનામહા વયુમસિકુ લ્લતી કદા અલૈહા અલ મૌત વયુરસિલુ અલ ઉખરા ઇલા અજલિલ મુસઈલા અજલિમ મુસમ્મા. ખુદા કહે છે, જયારે તમે સુઓ છો અને જયારે માણસ મરી જાય છે, હાલત એક છે. અને એક હાલત એટલે શું? કે જયારે માણસ સુઈ જાય છે એ ટાણે પણ, અને જયારે માણસ મરી જાય છે એ ટાણે પણ, માણસની રૂહ જિસ્મથી ખારિજ થઈ જાય છે. મોતમાં આપણે કહીએ કે આ મરી ગયું એટલે શું? રૂહ પરવાસ કરી ગઈ. પણ જયારે માણસ સુઈ જાય છે ત્યારે પણ રૂહ પરવાસ કરી જાય છે. ફકત ફરક એ છે કે જયારે માણસ સુઈ જાય છે, જ્યાં સુધી સૂતો છે એની રૂહ જિસ્મથી બહાર નીકળી જાય છે, પણ જયારે ઊંઘ ખતમ થવાનું ટાઈમ આવે છે, ખુદા એની રૂહ ફરીથી મોકલાવી દે છે, બોડીમાં આવે છે, માણસ જીવતો થઈ જાય છે. હું નથી કહેતો, કુરાન કહે છે, સૂરે ઝુમર વર્સ નંબર 42. પણ જયારે માણસ મરી જાય છે, યુમસિકુલ્લતી કદા અલૈહલ મૌત, પણ જે માણસની રૂહ ઉપર ખુદા કદાય હાલ કર્યો છે કે આ માણસ આજ રાતના મરી જાય છે, ત્યારે જયારે રૂહ નીકળે છે પછી આ રૂહ બદનમાં દાખલ થતી નથી, એને આપણે કહીએ છીએ મૌત. પણ જે રૂહ નીકળી જાય છે અને પછી જિસ્મમાં નાખવામાં આવે છે એને કહેવાય છે ઊંઘ, નીંદર, સ્લીપ. ફરક એક જ નથી, વસ્તુ એક છે, ફક્ત ટાઈમ ડ્યુરેશન નો ફરક છે. વરના બંને હાલતમાં જિસ્મમાંથી રૂહ નીકળી જાય છે, ઊંઘ અને નીંદરમાં શોર્ટ ટાઈમ પછી ફરીથી આવી જાય છે, મોતમાં ફરીથી નથી આવતું, રિટર્ન થઈ જાય છે. પણ આ હાલત એવી હાલત છે કે આ મોત એવી વસ્તુ છે કે માણસની દુનિયામાં રાહત કરી નાખે છે. અને એટલા માટે આપણી પાસે વારંવાર હદીસો આવી છે, વારંવાર હદીસો આવી છે કે મોતને યાદ કરો, અઝાબે કબરને યાદ કરો, જાઓ ટાઈમ હોય તો કબ્રસ્તાનમાં જાઓ, કબરના દરમિયાન ફરો કે જુઓ તમે કે તમારી સાથે જે માણસો હતા આજે તમારી પાસે માણસો નથી. આપણે કહીએ છીએ કે આપણે દુનિયામાં જીવિત છે, જાગી રહ્યા છે, કામકાજ કરે છે, આપણે જાગતા નથી, આપણે ઊંઘમાં છે અત્યારે, આપણે ગફલતમાં છે. કારણ કે સવારે થાય તો બિઝનેસમાં જાય, રાતના આવે તો ઘરે આવી જાય, પછી થોડું ન્યૂઝ જોઈએ, થોડું ટીવી જોઈએ, પછી સૂઈ જાય. આ આપણું રૂટીન માણસને ગાફિલ કરી નાખે છે. પૈસા કમાવાની લાલચ, આજ $5 મિલિયન છે, $10 મિલિયન કરવા છે. એક માણસ દુનિયામાં મહિનામાં કેટલો ખર્ચો કરે મને તમે કહો? $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. માણસ સોન તો નથી ખાતો, પણ એટલા પૈસા રહેવા છતાં ટ્રાય કરે છે કે મને 5 મિલિયન હોય તો 10 મિલિયન. ગાફિલ કરી નાખે છે દુનિયા. એટલા માટે ઇમામ કહે છે, આપણા પહેલા ઇમામ, કે આ દુનિયા તમને એટલી ફરેબ આપી દીધી છે કે તમને લાગે છે તમે જાગી રહ્યા છો, જાગતા નથી. તમે સપનાની હાલતમાં છો, ખ્વાબની હાલતમાં છો. તમારા આટલા ઊંટા ઊંચા ઊંચા એમ્બિશન્સ અને ગોલ્સ તમને આખરત ગાફિલ કરી નાખ્યું છે. તમે સુઈ રહ્યા છો, ઇમામ અમે તો ચાલી રહ્યા છે, અમે તો જાગી રહ્યા છે, અમે તો ખાઈ રહ્યા છે, કામ કરી રહ્યા છે, ક્યાં સૂતા છે? તમે સૂતા છો કારણ કે તમે જે માલ અને બધી વસ્તુ દુનિયાની જે જમા કરવાની લાલચમાં છો. આ તમે ક્યારે તમારી આંખ ખુલશે તમને ખબર છે? જ્યારે તમે મરશો ત્યારે તમે જાગશો. એટલા માટે હદીસ છે, અન્નાસો નિયામુન, માણસો સૂતા છે. ફઈઝા માથુ, જ્યારે મરી જશે, જ્યારે મલકુલ મૌત આવશે, આવશે, કમ ઓન લેટ્સ ગો, ઇન્સબહુ, ત્યારે આંખ ખુલશે. આઈ 60 વર્ષની જિંદગી હું ક્યાં ખોવાઈ દીધી? અમારા $10 મિલિયન બેંકમાં પડ્યા છે, હું 3.5 3.3 મિલિયન થી વધારે યુઝ નથી કરી શકતો. 1/3 જ તમને હક છે, માણસ મરી જાય 1/3 હક છે તમે યુઝ કરવા માટે. ત્યારે આંખ ખુલશે, મારી પૂરી લાઈફ વેસ્ટ કર્યો, મને ખપતા હતા $3,000 મહિનાના, હું 20,000 મહિનાના કમાવતો તો શું ફાયદો, શું ફાયદો? ઇમામ કે છે નાસ નિયામુન, માણસ સૂતા છે. મલેકુલ મોત ને જયારે જોશે, એટલે 500 એસોસિએટ્સ અને કમ્પેનિયન્સ લઈને આવશે અને દરેકના હાથમાં આપણે જોશું શું થશે, ત્યારે આંખ ખુલશે શું થઈ ગયું. 70 વર્ષ 60 વર્ષ ક્યાં ગયા? અત્યારે હું જાગ્યો છું, પણ અત્યારે જાગ્યા પછી કઈ નથી. કેમ? કારણ કે બરઝખ આવશે, વાત કરશું. પણ એટલા માટે કહેવામાં આવે છે, વારંવાર યાદ કરો તમે મૌતને, વારંવાર યાદ કરો. અક્સિરુ ઝિક્રલ મૌત, જાઓ. અને આપણી પાસે રિવાજ છે, જાઓ દરમિયાન ખબરમાં જો કેવી રીતે પડ્યા છે, પાવર હતો, પૈસા હતા, માણસો હતા, શાન હતું, શૌકત હતી, બધી ચીજ હતી, અત્યારે ક્યાં છે? અંદર છે. જાઓ તો જુઓ, તજુર્બો હાસિલ કરો, મોત આવા પહેલા જાગી જાઓ. કારણ કે મોત આવ્યા પછી જાયગા તો પછી કઈ કામ નહીં આવે, પછી કઈ કામ નહીં આવે. ઓર યે ચીજ થી કે જો હમકુ જો ઇમામ બતાતે હૈ વો ખુદ ભી ઇસ પર અમલ કરતે હૈ, બાર બાર મોત હું યાદ કરો. સોચો કે તુમ્હારે સામને જો કલ થે آج زمین کے اندر آئے ہیں. بڑے بڑے محل میں رہنے والے آج چھ فٹ کے قبر میں پڑے. یو ڈونٹ ٹیک اینی تھنگ. دا کرنسیز آر ڈفرنٹ. جو پیسے ہوتے ہیں نا یہاں کے وہاں کے میچ نہیں ہوتے. ٹینسین ان شلنگز اگر جو امریکہ لے جاؤ تو کیا خرید سکو آپ؟ کچھ نہیں. یہاں کے ملین ڈالرز وہاں لے جاؤ کچھ نہیں, نتھنگ. امام کہتے بار بار یاد کرو, اور امام خود یاد کرتے تھے. وہ پورا راستہ جو امام نے طے کیا مکہ سے لے کر کربلا تک, بار بار استرجا, بار بار استرجا, انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون. یہ کہا جاتا ہے نا کہ جب آپ کے درمیان سے کوئی گزر جائے, میت ہو جائے, سب سے پہلے کو انا للہ, ہم اللہ کی طرف سے ہے, وہ انا الیہ راجعون, ہمیں اسی کے پاس پلٹ کر جانا ہے. ارے میرے بھائی وہ گزر گیا ہے, تم کیوں اپنی فکر کرتے ہو؟ اسلام کہتا ہے اس کو دیکھ کے عبرت لو, اپنے آپ کو سکھاؤ, بار بار کہو وہ گیا, اب ہماری باری ہے. بار بار امام کہتے تھے انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون, انا للہ. خواب سے اٹھے انا للہ, بیٹھے ہوئے ہیں انا للہ. بعض اوقات جناب علی اکبر پریشان, ارے بابا استرجاع کا وقت نہیں. یہ کون سی استرجاع, کیا حالت ہے کہ اب بار بار انا للہ و انا الیہ راجعون, ذکر الموت. مگر وہ سفر شروع کرنے سے پہلے مکہ سے لے کے کربلا تک جو سفر انہوں نے طے کیا, اس سے پہلے ایک چھوٹا سفر مدینے سے مکے کا سفر, عجیب سفر, پانچ دن کا سفر. لیکن یہ پانچ دن کا سفر امام کو شروع کرتے کرتے امام کا کلیجہ پھٹ جاتا ہے. کیونکہ جب ولید کے دربار سے پلٹتے ہیں تو ایک مرتبہ زینب سے کہتے, بہن زینب اب مدینے رسول رہنے کے قابل نہ رہا, سفر کی تیاری شروع کرو. بہن نے پوچھا بھیا خیریت؟ کہا نہیں بہن خیریت نہیں, کیونکہ ابھی ولید کے دربار سے آ رہا, کہا گیا کہ اب جو حاکم آیا ہے وہ یزید اصرار کر رہا ہے کہ میں اس کی بیعت کروں. اور بہن زینب تم تو جانتی ہو حسین کبھی یزید جیسے شخص کی بیعت نہیں کر سکتا, ہمیں جانا ہوگا کیونکہ مدینے رسول اب رہنے کے قابل نہ رہا. ارے عزادارو آپ جانتے ہیں اس کا مطلب؟ مدینے رسول کو چھوڑنے کا مطلب جانتے ہیں؟ ذرا حسین سے پوچھئے, مدینے رسول کو چھوڑنا یعنی صرف شہر کو چھوڑنا نہیں, مدینے رسول کو چھوڑنا یعنی رسول کی قبر کو چھوڑنا. نانا رسول سے جدائی, نانا رسول سے صرف نہیں بھیا حسن سے جدائی, اور اس سے بڑھ کر اماں فاطمہ زہرا سے جدائی. کوئی پوچھے حسین کے دل سے مدینہ چھوڑنا یعنی کیا؟ ایک مرتبہ زینب سفر کی تیاری میں مصروف ہو جاتی ہیں, یہاں رسول کے نواسے ایک مرتبہ رخ کرتے ہیں رسول کی قبر کا, جیسے روضہ ذریعے رسول کے پاس آتے ہیں, قبر رسول کے پاس آتے ہیں, ایک مرتبہ لپٹ جاتے ہیں قبر کو, رونا شروع کرتے ہیں. روایت بتاتی ہے اتنا روتے ہیں امام حسین, اتنا روتے ہیں امام حسین, ایک مرتبہ روتے روتے آنکھ بند ہو جاتی, خواب میں دیکھتے ہیں رسول, قبر کھلتی ہے رسول باہر, جیسے نانا کو دیکھا, شاید میرا دل کہتا ہے وہ بچپنے کا منظر یاد آ گیا جب سوار بنے تھے اور سواری پر حسین بیٹھ کر نانا کی پشت پر کھیلا کرتے تھے, مگر وہ ایک زمانہ اور آج کا ایک زمانہ. جیسے رسول کو دیکھا ایک مرتبہ حسین نے کہا ایک جملہ کہا, اے نانا کیا یہ ہو نہیں سکتا کہ آپ مجھے اپنے پاس بلا لے, کیا میں یہی دم نہیں توڑ لوں؟ ارے حسین, نانا کہتے حسین اگر میں تمہیں اپنے پاس بلا دیا تو پھر کربلا کو کون برپا کرے گا, کربلا کو کون برپا کرے گا؟ نہیں حسین تمہیں کربلا جانا ہوگا. ایک مرتبہ آنکھ کھلتی ہے, آخری سلام کرتے ہیں, وہاں سے نکلتے ہیں حسین, جاتے ہیں بھیا حسن کے پاس, آخری سلام کرتے ہیں, اب آتے ہیں آخری قبر اماں فاطمہ زہرا, دو زانو بیٹھتے ہیں, سر کو قبر پر رکھتے ہیں, السلام علیک یا امہ, اے مادر گرامی فاطمہ, حسین کا سلام, حسین آخری سلام کرنے آیا ہے. اب وہ بیٹا جو آپ کی قبر پر شمع جلاتا تھا دوبارہ شمع جلانے نہیں آئے گا. رو رو کر جب حسین اٹھتے ہیں, روایت کے جملے عرض کرتا ہوں, جیسے حسین اٹھے ایک مرتبہ قبر اقدس سے آواز آتی, یا بنیا و علیک السلام, اے میرے بیٹے حسین تم پر میرا سلام, اے میرے مظلوم بیٹے جاتے ہو تو جاؤ مگر ایک بات یاد رکھنا, یہ دخیاری ماں تمہیں اکیلے جانے نہیں دے گی, جہاں جاؤ گے یہ دخیاری ماں اپنی ٹوٹی پسلی پکڑتے ہوئے تمہارے ساتھ آئے گی. اسی لیے تو تاریخ بتاتی ہے بار بار مختلف جگہوں پر فاطمہ کی گریا کی آواز, نوحے کی آواز, ہائے میرا بیٹا حسین, ہائے میرا لال حسین. کبھی راستے کوفہ میں, کبھی شام کے راستے میں, کبھی شب عاشور میں, کبھی شام کے زندان میں, وہی زہرا کا نوحہ. مگر ایک مرتبہ جب قافلہ نکلا تو حسین آئے تھے نا رسول کی قبر پر, اے نانا اب آپ کا شہر مدینہ ہمارے رہنے لائق نہ رہا. یہ حسین نے کب کہا تھا؟ جب ان کا اس کا پورا خاندان ساتھ تھا. حسین کا خاندان ابھی اجڑا نہیں, اگر جاتے وقت حسین کہتے نانا اب آپ کا شہر رہنے لائق نہ رہا, اب یہی بات جو حسین جاتے ہوئے کہہ گئے بہن آتے ہوئے کہتی ہے, ام کلثوم جیسے مدینے میں وارد ہوتی ہے, یہی تو نوحہ تھا, اے مدینہ رسول ہماری آمد کو قبول نہ کرنا, کیونکہ جب گئے تھے تو بھرا گھرانہ لے گئے تھے, اب جب آئے تو بڑوں کا سایہ سر سے جا چکا, بچے جو ہاتھ میں گودیوں میں تھے کربلا کے ریگستان میں رہ گئے. اور جاتے وقت جب حسین نے گئی, حسین رسول کے قبر پر جا کر شکایت کی تھی, جب آتے وقت اب زینب کی باری ہے, قبر پر جاتی ہے, اے نانا رسول زینب حسین کی خبر لے آئی, حسین درمیان میں نہ رہے, سکینہ جا چکی. ارے اگر نامحرم نہ ہوتے تو رسن کے داغ کوڑوں کے نشان دکھاتی, اے نانا میرا سجاد کربلا سے کوفہ ہتھکڑیاں بیڑیاں. واہ حسین, سیعلم الذین ظلموا ای منقلب ینقلبون. فاطمہ حسین.